This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. We're here with Salem Sagai. Now, we're very delighted that she's coming to talk to us. And this is basically what we're going to be talking about is funding for the arts and the discrepancies that we see, or shall I say the disparities that we do see when it comes to BIPOC-led and BIPOC institutions. But before we dive into that, let's talk a little bit about who you are and who you work for.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Tony and Eli. So my name is Salem. I'm a program officer for arts and culture at the New York Community Trust. And the New York Community Trust is a public charity and the New York metro area's largest community foundation. And essentially what we do is connect donors with nonprofits that are doing really interesting work to improve New Yorkers' lives. So all kinds of areas, education, health, the environment, and then the area that I work in, arts and culture, too.
Well, wonderful. I want to know a lot more about the New York Community Trust. How big is it?
It's pretty big.
Yeah, I know that.
We have assets of a little over $3 billion dollars. And, you know, we started, I think it was in 1924, so we're actually approaching our centennial soon. It was started by a group of bankers that essentially wanted to create a permanent mechanism for allowing New Yorkers to engage in charitable giving. So since then, we've been making thousands of grants through, I think now we have about more than 2,000 charitable funds at the trust that allow us to do that charitable giving.
So you're talking about New Yorkers, so individuals come and say, I want to donate some money, or I want you to help me donate money.
Yeah, exactly. So they can come and set up a fund. And, you know, there's sort of two sides of the business. We work with living donors that want to, you know, engage in charitable giving during their lifetime. And then we also, you know, sometimes folks will leave the trust in their will and actually leave money behind to, you know, engage in that charitable giving well beyond their lifetimes. And so most of our competitive grants that we make, it's discretionary funds at, these days, that's what essentially a lot of the program officers manage, is money that folks have left behind that, you know, they want to make sure gets into sort of the right hands.
So this is a combination of, as I understand it, so it's organizations and individuals, high net worth individuals that are the funders?
Yeah, and, you know, not always high net worth individuals. It's just anyone that wants to, engage in charitable giving. So, you know, I don't know what the minimum is to open up a fund, but, you know, I could open up a fund there, too, if I wanted, and, you know, direct the monies to certain nonprofits that I want to support. So it's definitely, you know, a community foundation. I think that's the distinction, is that, you know, we have a number of funds that allow us to engage in charitable giving, whereas, you know, you think of a private foundation that might have a single endowment and it's completely unrestricted. For us, sometimes the funds actually do have more narrow purposes, right? So when I do my grant making, I might be drawing from a fund that is specifically intended to support chamber music, mm-hmm. or a fund that might want to support the performing arts, or a fund that might want to support arts and culture broadly. So part of the job is actually doing that matchmaking where we're actually finding the nonprofits that can honor the donor's wishes in the way that they intended.
It's so interesting because I didn't realize that's basically how you work. So what you're doing is giving someone who wants to give a strategy for their giving, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say that so the competitive grants program, you know, that's about a third of our annual grant making that we make at the trust. And a lot of the program officers are working with these permanent funds, right? So every year we have a budget and we're supposed to spend the monies according to, you know, what the fund agreement dictates. And, you know, it's a combination of sort of reviewing the proposals that come in and understanding what funds you have available and doing that matchmaking where you're making sure that, you know, the right nonprofit sort of gets the money to carry out their work.
So what's your criteria for the matchmaking, though?
So there are a lot of considerations. Every program area, so as I said, I manage the arts and culture grant making at the trust. We actually have a strategy. It's a board-approved strategy that we follow. that, you know, takes into consideration the various fund purposes that you might be working with and creates something broader that allows you to really think more strategically about how to direct the monies while giving you some flexibility. So for the arts and culture portfolio, we have a couple of key priorities. One of them is to, you know, support, I would say, opportunities for artists and, you know, cultural participants from diverse backgrounds. So when you think about New York City and how diverse it is, the goal there is to really support programs that nonprofits are operating that ensure that, you know, a variety of New Yorkers get to experience arts and culture or get to pursue, you know, arts as a career if they wanted to.
So the projects are, so give funding to individuals and organizations, I assume?
So most of our grant making is for 501c3 nonprofits or fiscally sponsored organizations. Yeah. So we basically work with the nonprofits so that they can then, you know, serve artists and audiences.
You know, you did a big bailout of art and culture organizations during COVID, as I recall. Can you speak a little bit about what you did during that time period?
Yeah. So, that was a tough time. So
yes, it was.
Yeah, we, you know, so the trust actually has a decades-long history of managing what we call collaborative funds. So anytime there is an urgent need or crisis that arises, we usually will organize funders to pool resources and make grants collectively. So a great example of that is the COVID-19 Response and Impact Fund that we created in 2020 with so many funders, actually included both institutional funders and individual donors. And it was, you know, tens of millions of dollars that went to arts and culture nonprofits that were navigating the effects of the pandemic in the more immediate term. So it was pretty intense.
Now, there were a lot of inequities that were revealed during COVID. Talk to us about how that came to light. What was caused people to understand, meaning was it the groups, people telling you that, in fact, they felt as though BIPOC-led institutions were not getting their fair share? How did that all come to light for New York Community Trust?
Yeah, well, you know, when it comes to inequities in funding, I would say that that actually came to light well before the pandemic. You know, it's been decades, I think, of advocacy on behalf of organizations that have been trying to sort of, draw the attention of funders to under-resourced organizations, which are typically tend to be people of color-led arts and cultural institutions. And there's tons of, you know, research, and I think you'll find this probably it's true across a variety of sectors. It's not unique to arts and culture. But you often see, you know, a vast majority of contributed income going to large, predominantly white institutions. And so, you know, the idea with sort of equitable grant making is to actually try to redress those inequities, those disparities in funding to make sure that the groups that have experienced that historical disinvestment are actually getting the philanthropic resources they need to be able to do their work efficiently and in the longer term. So, you know, I would say that 2020, there were just a number of things that happened in 2020, the pandemic, social uprisings related to the murder of George Floyd. There was a lot going on that I think brought folks to, you know, sort of a point where the calls were no longer sort of passive, let's make this change. It was more of a demand, like we actually have to change these systems, acknowledging that, you know, it's unjust and it's not fair. So, you know, that sort of trickles into all aspects, I think, of our day-to-day lives, including the work that we do as funders at the Trust and, you know, with the collaborative funds that we do as well.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Salem Sagai. Now we're going to be talking about the Mosaic Fund. But Eli, did you have something that you wanted to get in there?
It'd be great to get some examples of the kind of projects that you're working on.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. There's so many. So, you know, I think Mosaic, the Mosaic Networking Fund actually is like a huge part of the work that I'm doing right now in terms of managing. I will say there's a number of stakeholders involved in that work. And, you know, it's an entire network that we manage with that includes arts practitioners, leaders of nonprofits, and funders as well. So a lot of my job is actually coordinating a lot of that activity and also managing the grant making that happens through the pooled fund. You know, other than that, you know, my day to day and sort of the work that I do is just kind of a cycle of making grants to nonprofits that apply to the trust.
Now, you said a collaboration. Who are the funders that are involved in? Talk a little bit more about what this collaboration is.
For the Mosaic Networking Fund? Yep.
Yes.
So today, so let me offer a little bit of history. So yes. The Mosaic Networking Fund was established in 2018 to direct more resources to our arts and cultural organizations in the city that are created by, led by, for, about, and accountable to people of color. And the idea with that, you know, it's a pooled fund, so there are a number of donors that contribute resources that we can then collectively re-grant out to these organizations. And, you know, I think today we have about 26 or 27 donors that contribute to the fund. And the other element of our work that's also in the name is network. And the network is actually a learning community. What we try to do through that work is bring folks together to engage in dialogue, to make connections where they might not exist, and to sort of build and sustain relationships that I think is, you know, sort of more about relational capital and what it means to, you know, be in community with folks that may have different experiences than you and, you know, different sort of understandings and appreciation of what arts and culture means for them, too. And, you know, when you create that kind of space, it actually just opens all kinds of possibilities for how to do your work differently, including as a funder. So, you know, the intention there is to actually, you know, in the long term, I will say, is through those relationships, actually start to influence change in individual funder portfolios. So beyond the pooled fund, acknowledging that there's only so much money you can raise through that kind of mechanism, the idea is to actually start to see shifts in how individual funders are directing their grant making so that it's benefiting most of these groups.
So is an intentionality that goes beyond just funding a project, but also to shifting the field to a certain extent. Is that
yeah,
accurate?
There's definitely a sort of emphasis, I would say, on systemic change.
And, so strategic.
You know, the idea is to, I mean, but right, the thing with systemic change is that it takes a really long time.
Now let's talk about what you mean when you say systemic change. Mm-hmm. What are those changes in this system that you think need to be revised?
Mm-hmm. There's so a lot of things that have at least come to light in the conversations that we've hosted through the Mosaic Network and Fund has a lot to do with like policies and procedures that individual foundations might have that can function as barriers, right, for folks to get support. A good example of that is, you know, many foundations have a minimum operating budget requirement of $250,000.
Right.
And, you know, that is a problem because you think about New York City's sort of cultural, like, nonprofit landscape, about 50% actually have budgets at the 250K mark or below. So essentially what you're doing, right, is closing doors, right, to those organizations. So the idea is to really think about why, you know, some of those restrictions are in place and if there's anything we can do to actually alleviate some of those barriers. And there are some ways sort of around it. You know, a lot of funders, or I would say like foundations these days, are looking at intermediary funding organizations that have more flexibility.
So I was looking at the list in the projects in the Mosaic Fund, and there's a couple of them that really sort of caught our eye. One's Angela's Purse.
Yes, Angela's Pulse.
Angela,
he's got money.
Angela
on
Pulse.
My.
Yeah, it's a dance. It's a dance artist activist exploring ways to collectively finance and sustain work at intersection of performance, anti-racist organizations, etc.
Yeah.
But you know, the reason I'm asking that is because it'd be great to get a sense of like, okay, so what does that look like on the ground?
Yeah. So Angela's Pulse. As you mentioned, it's a collective of dance artists and activists. These are folks that whose practice, right, you know, they're performers, but their practice is also rooted in anti-racism and, you know, community building. So essentially what they do, and one of the things I think that the Mosaic Fund is actually supporting is how to engage in that work more broadly so that they can actually work with different communities. They might, let's say, get a contract to work with students at a university that are interested in anti-racist organizing. And so what they might do then is go in and actually, you know, offer a training or a workshop where they, you know, there's performance involved, but the idea is to really, you know, build a sense of connection and community with the people that are in that group. So, you know, we try to support, well, I will say that in 2019, we made a variety of grants that were supposed to help some of the nonprofits that got funded with projects that they felt would be transformational for their organization, right? So they defined that themselves and actually identified a project that they felt would sort of meet that criteria for them. And with Angela's Pulse, you know, they're it's a collective. So it's not an incorporated organization. It's not a 501c3, nor do they have the intention of actually incorporating in the future, right? They want to operate as a collective of individual artists. So what they're looking at is ways to actually finance and sustain that work without having to incorporate. And it's really interesting because they have a bunch of consultants that are working with them. And you know, I think what they're trying to do is find a way to still do the work they want to do without sort of assimilating, I guess, to the sort of 501c3 nonprofit model, which a lot of artists, I think, actually are interested in. And part of the reason why so many work with fiscal sponsors as opposed to actually incorporating.
So would you say that it's a new model for an organization?
It's not new.
Almost a version? No.
It's not new, but I think it's catching on more.
Yeah. You're talking about the fiscal
sponsorship. Yeah.
I can see why, because getting your own 501c3, it's a lot of work and there's a lot of legalities involved and you've got to get a board. And there are many, many things that you need to do when you're a fiscal sponsor. You use their 501c3. There is reporting that needs to happen, but it's just the same level of complexity, I would think.
So a model like that, somebody could actually operate pretty quickly and
flexibly. Right? Yeah. The idea is that you don't have the same administrative burden that like a nonprofit
would
have. Yeah.
So how do they track their results? How do they know they're being transformative? I mean, I guess that's true for a lot.
Or how do you know that they're being transformative since the investment is coming from the Mosaic Fund?
Right. Yeah.
Right, but a lot of way that organizations show that they're transformative invariably is more anecdotal.
True.
Right? As opposed to empirical.
Right.
If one had some means for doing empirical.
Hard to quantify sometimes.
Yeah.
That's definitely true.
It's an intercept pull out the door of the dance. How did you enjoy it? You know, that kind of thing. It's not like you said.
Well, begs the question is there are technologies out there that one could use to, like, even look at this thing about creating a network. Mm-hmm. I bet you there's no visualization of what the network is that's dynamic.
Which
would be useful.
That would be.
Because then you'd be able to see some connections that wouldn't be self-evident, no?
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, it's really, so thinking about like measuring sort of outcomes or, you know, whether or not someone accomplished what they set out to do. With Mosaic, we are thinking about that a little bit differently in terms of like evaluative measures. You know, this isn't sort of a traditional grant making program in many ways. And one of them is how we think about success. Because what we're trying to do fundamentally is just resource organizations that have been doing good work, right, for some time. So part of it is just acknowledging that. And the second part of it, too, is, you know, when you talk about arts and cultural work, so much of it is qualitative. You know, so much of the change that I think you see and witness is not something that you can quantify. It's not a numbers thing, right? So part of it is, well, most of it is anecdotal, but it's also listening to what folks tell you, you know, is transformational for them. So if they come out of this feeling like, you know, their group is stronger because they have more connections with others, like, then that is meaningful. If they come out of it saying, you know, we have a lot more contributed income now, then that's meaningful to them, that's also a success, right? I think the idea is to let folks define success for themselves. And, you know, it is a different sort of approach for us, at least in terms of thinking of, you know, a return on investment.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. We're talking to Salam Sagai from the New York Community Trust.
You know, Salam, this has been really a fascinating conversation. Wanted to know, though, since so many approaches are based in data now, I know that there was a report done by the Yancey Group, I believe. Can you talk to us about that process that got you to the Mosaic Fund?
So the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation and the New York Community Trust co-commissioned that report from Yancey Consulting to better understand in a New York City-specific context the health and viability of arts nonprofits of color in the city, and also understand what the needs were and how to sort of take a systemic sort of approach to resolving some of the issues that many were experiencing right across the board. So more, I think, the most interesting sort of elements of that report was actually what came out as like solutions or how to recommendations, I guess, to help redress some of those disparities. And it kind of falls into three big buckets, I think. The first one, we know it has to do with grant making. Basically, the call was for investments that, you know, were larger in terms of the amount, that were longer term, right? So that usually means multi-year support, and then that were more flexible, right? A lot of times, foundations, and this is true of the trust too, a lot of our competitive grants are project-based grants. And, you know, what the report was calling for was general operating support, which basically affords organizations greater flexibility in allocating resources as they see fit. So that was one element. The second sort of big bucket recommendations fell under capacity building. The idea there is to just strengthen sort of organizational capacity through non-financial resources like technical assistance, right? Working with consultants and others. It could be around professional development opportunities, but just offering that kind of support to supplement any monies that would be going to organizations. And then also money to support sort of key administrative roles that, and, you know, this goes back to sort of what we were talking about with regards to nonprofits and what it takes to operate them. You know, you need a development staff, you need a marketing team, you need a variety of administrative roles. And I think, you know, part of what the report was drawing attention to was the fact that, you know, when groups are under-resourced, they actually can't hire those key roles, right? And so you fall into this, like, catch-22 where, well, I can't increase my budget because I don't have these key roles, right, that allow me
I don't have a development director.
to raise money for my organization.
And I can't afford one.
Yeah, so it's tough. But, you know, that's another big bucket. The last thing that came out of the ANSI report was focused more on peer connections, like how do you foster learning and, you know, sort of relationship building and exchange so that, you know, you're making those connections and it's not just about sort of what you can offer to someone, right, be it financial or other.
Now, you said that 50% of the art and culture organizations don't have budgets at $250,000 or more. So How do you see this growing? Meaning you're able to fund certain groups, but then there's a whole lot of other groups that aren't getting the funding. How do you plan on addressing those groups, or you just can't?
So the great thing about the Mosaic Network and Fund is that we actually don't have that kind of minimum budget threshold. We fund organizations with budgets as small as like $20,000 a year.
Oh, come on.
Which means,
really?
Yeah,
really?
$20,000? Which means it's a primarily volunteer-based organization.
Right.
But, right, again, the point is that some groups don't want to actually grow in the ways that others might, don't want to have professional staff, but still want to put on their program, still want to give artists opportunities. And if they can do that with, right, the sort of limited monies, then that's, if that's what they want to do, I think that that's something that we should be able to support. So in 2019, we made grants. Yeah, I think the budget operating budget size ranged pretty widely for the grantees in that pool. I think the smallest may have had an operating budget of maybe $7,000 a year. Yeah. And then, you know, there were, I think the largest was like closer to $3 million. So it was a pretty big range.
What's $7,000 going
to be? Yeah, well, I don't know. That was,
but, you know, for this group in particular, right, what they do is put on these sort of open mic nights for performers,
okay. Right?
Right? Okay. That don't typically... they might not have like opportunities to present their work. And sometimes it's comedy. Sometimes it could be musical. Whatever.
Thank you for clarifying
that. Yeah. So this group is called Performing Arts Mosaic, right? Like, they don't have any intention of, like, acquiring a space and, like, paying rent on a space. What they do is just, like, find venues, right, for their particular needs at a given time, and then they'll do that work. So, and, you know, the money is actually, like, mostly is to support, like, putting on those performances, but also providing fees to the artists that come on stage.
So some of the money goes to, yeah. How do you vet these things?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a lot of vetting that happens.
It's not under test, so.
No, I know. So, you know, typically, I would say, like, for the trust, what we usually do, we have a whole due diligence process where we look at things like, you know, financial stability at an organization, which is really important. And then, you know, make sure there's sufficient staffing. The other piece, too, is looking at potential conflicts of interest on the board. So we do look at board composition and just make sure, you know, all is set there. Outside of that, you know, there are a variety of criteria that we use to assess proposals. So that's sort of beyond just, you know, organizational capability. At this point, you're talking about, you know, discrete projects that an organization wants to carry out.
And I imagine also its ability to execute would be part of that, too,
exactly.
Right? Because whether this person say they can do what they can do. Right,
right. And that part of that includes, like, is there a track record here of actually having done this before? You know, what, you know, credibility does the organization have with this community, right? Like, is it actually accountable to its community? Like, do, you know, folks attend their shows and really, like, know them and love them? And these are the kinds of things that I think are more sort of, you know, the role of a program officer is to actually do a lot of that investigating. And
oh, this is great. No, you're giving a lot of really interesting, great information. What are you seeing as results overall in terms of the investment that you've made? Can you just talk to us very broadly about what this investment has done and what it's meant to BIPOC organizations?
So I will say the one thing that is, like, super important that, you know, maybe we hadn't actually planned for were just, you know, the connections that organizations were able to form with each other. Because I think we were primarily thinking about this as, like, enhancing sort of funder, you know, nonprofit leader relationships. But it's so much deeper than that. And, you know, again, there's a lot of things that can come out of those connections, including partnerships between organizations that may have not worked together before. In terms of the actual monies, you know, it's still early. Like, we've only been doing this for 3 years. It feels a lot longer, but it hasn't been that long. I think, you know, I think about this a lot, actually, just personally. But another sort of the idea with Mosaic in terms of the network and what we hope to do through those relationships is, like I mentioned, it's actually to change, you know, individual funder portfolios and how they do their grant making. There's so much more available, I think, through those foundation portfolios than there is through a pooled fund, right? Because we have to actually raise money to be able to re-grant it out.
So is it a shift in thinking, a shift in focus?
It's like behavioral, actually.
Right.
There's a lot of, like, change in practice, like how you actually assess, right, proposals. Like you said, how do you vet organizations? Like, are we really thinking critically about how maybe some of the ways that we vet is actually, you know, it prevents us from supporting certain.
It discriminates, and not intentionally, but it does.
Right. It could be exclusionary. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Well, so it begs an interesting question is, and a lot of organizations have this, you know what I mean? They want to change people's behavior. So is there a behaviorist on staff? No, I'm serious, because, you know, you're talking about changing behavior.
No, but, you know,
it's not about, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's, like, psychological behavior, and there's also cultural. And I think about the cultural piece a little bit more, because
it's systemic.
This is bigger than, it takes individual shifting to get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
It's hearts and minds.
It's not, exactly. And it's not just, yeah, and it's not, part of it is about just making different decisions. You know
right.
what I mean? That sometimes
Period.
It's as simple
well, yeah,
as that.
But, right.
But sometimes it's actually a lot harder than that, right? Because you have to think about sort of, you know, there are
all
kinds
of. Who feels
like
they're not getting so that someone else can get? That's a shift right there, you know?
Yeah.
There's also
or just
research that says you can change a committed group by changing a percentage. Mm-hmm. It's not 100%. It's more like, mm-hmm. you know, 30-40% to get them the rest of the shift. But that's something like that takes, like, network and system thinking.
And I, you know, I'm glad you said that, Eli, because right. I think that with Mosaic, it was never, right, this is one initiative, it was never going to change an entire system. The idea was for it to function as a catalyst. And, like, what can we sort of demonstrate through this work that might actually inspire others to take similar action? And so we have seen a great example of this is America's Cultural Treasures, a program that the Ford Foundation has started that essentially is allowing other regions to pool resources and engage in similar work to direct more monies to BIPOC-led arts organizations.
Well, I am certainly hoping that this is successful. So thank you so much, Salem. This
thank
was
you.
Wonderful. You were just fantastic.
Thank you.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.